Hebrew just simply comes from, these are the words of Moses. They call it the words. It's really a series of farewell sermons. He dies. We already read it. He dies at the end of the book. And so it's a series of these farewell sermons from Moses to the Israelites, where he urges them to love God, as we said, obey his laws, follow the leadership of Joshua as he's going to pass on the baton. You followed me, now I need you to follow Captain Joshua into the next part. Now, of course, in the before Jesus comes on the scene, we have, when they have just the Old Testament put together, about 150 years before Christ, they 70 guys that come up with, for the first time, taking the Hebrew scriptures and turns it into Greek. So since there were 70 guys, Septuagint is where it gets that name. And so we have the whole Old Testament before Jesus comes, before the New Testament's written. We already have it translated into the Greek. And so that's why sometimes we're reading in the New Testament and they quote something from the Old, and you go back to the, and you go, ah, it's a little bit different. Well, sometimes Paul was quoting from the Septuagint, which is just a little bit different, as it is any translation in any language at any time. It's always just a little bit different words, and so we don't have to freak out that, oh, it's a little different. Sometimes they were quoting from the Septuagint there. And so you see in the, you don't, because I didn't put it up there, here it comes, there, wait for it, there. To Deuteronomoron Toto, or something else for that. It simply means the second law. So in the Greek Septuagint, they named it that, and basically calling it the second law, which he's really not giving a different law, like a second set of laws. It's really reinstating what he already said, expanding a little bit the law originally given at Sinai, that's recorded in Exodus in the book of Leviticus, expanding, giving a little more commentary, a little more detail on that, but it's not a second, okay, we changed that, we're giving a whole new batch. That's really not it, it's just the restating of that. Deuteronomy fills in the missing elements and gives a spiritual significance of the history found in the other books of Moses. And so he's going to kind of help them out with some reasons on why some certain things happened, and help them out with that. In kind of the setting of what's taking place, where the Jews receive these words is very crucial to understanding the significance of what is said. Where it's said is significant of what is said. If you remember where it's said, again, it's, well, look where the arrow is. They come out on the far left-hand side. The children of Israel, they get out of Egypt. They cross over the Red Sea. They come down to Sinai. They come up and they make the big loop at the top. So right where that red arrow is pointing to, they say they were 11 miles to build a home. They'd been nomadic for all of these years. They've been Bedouins. Like they still have Bedouins today, and they're just in their little mobile tents that they go around. They got a few goats, a few sheep, or whatever else. That's what they were. They were Bedouins, and now they're actually going to be able to get in the land. So it's a whole new era for this new group. Amidst all of this newness for this generation, God wasn't new. Same old God. Same faithful God, remaining unchanged. The unchanging God is the one that they serve. Still holy, still faithful, still jealous for the devotion of his people. Still jealous after that, desiring of that, of them. And guess what? You and I tonight, still jealous of that, wanting your devotion. The book ends with the last four chapters that mark the end of Moses' life. His life ends like it began, with God and him conversing on a mountain. It began with God and him up on Sinai and talking and getting in the law. It ends with him up on Mount Nebo, there in the land of Moab, talking with God once again. And there's this leadership transition that takes place, passing the baton to Joshua. And Moses takes in a breathtaking view of, like we showed you, of the promised land, which is really just a mere shadow of where he was going. You know, I thought, gosh, he didn't get to get into the promised land. But really, what was better? Where did he go when he died? He went right to heaven. The real promised land, right? The ultimate promise of the promised land, the true land of milk and honey. And so he says, you don't get to go in here. It's really just a big desert. But you get to come home with me. Not too bad. And there he was met, not with a burning bush, but by the great I Am and all his blazing splendor. Home at last. Think about it. Pretty awesome. You run in the middle of desert, you run into this bush on fire, but it's not being consumed. Pretty soon that bush starts talking. Pretty soon you recognize, it tells you to, the bush yelling at you, get your sandals off. This is holy ground, you know. Why was it holy ground? Not because that was some special spot there, but it's now become a special spot because God's standing there. It's the presence of God that's there. And so he goes from this, the beginning of his ministry of meeting with God in the burning bush, and ends with him a flame and a glow up in heaven, where those seraphim cover their face because of the brightness of God in heaven is so radiant and glorious and beautiful. And so there he finds himself, home at last. Home at last. Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting into the book of Deuteronomy with you. We're going to have some fun. It's a big book. And so what I'll try to do is kind of highlight each week just a few things to be able to pull out of each chapter to be able to strike our hearts that we can use in our lives.